In Play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain, a worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Pragmatic. For over 10 years, he had the title of the fastest man in high school track in South Dakota. He had to be convinced, though, to participate in track, and when he committed to running track, nobody could beat him. His senior year, still one of the all-time greats in South Dakota high school track history. Played football and ran some track in college, and today he's a doctor. In fact, he's watching his son light up the track as well. He's the Yankton Buck, the Augie Viking, Chris Fisher. And Chris, welcome to In Play.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
You know, I did read an article a few years back that you had to be convinced to come out and participate in track. You had other interests at the time. You know, this is about the time you were like sixth grade. So what was it that you had your sights on instead of track at that time?
You know, it was tennis. I had picked up playing tennis kind of late elementary school years into middle school. And a good friend of mine, Ben Anderson, who I always lost to at the city tournament. But we played a lot of tennis together, and I really loved the sport. You know, up until that point, I kind of dabbled in playing different sports, soccer, football, and track. And while I liked those, tennis was kind of always my go-to. And, you know, coming up through middle school, I ran some track, had some decent success. But when I started my freshman year of high school, I was pretty convinced that I was going to have tennis as my primary focus in the spring. And I decided to also try to go out for the track team, but figured, you know, that probably at that point, didn't see myself as the fastest person, even in town there. There were a lot of other great athletes, Chris Johnson, Jason Williamson, a lot of fast guys. I mean, Yankton was known for big, fast athletes. And so I never thought I would succeed quite as much in track and field as I would in tennis. And so I went out for tennis, and there was a very specific moment I recall when everything kind of changed. So Ray Koistra, who is a mentor of mine, and to this day, when I look back on the coaches that have, I think, influenced me the most, Ray Koistra is right up there. But he came over one day while I was at tennis practice, called me over and said, "Hey, Fisher, it's time to put that racket down. We need you over in track and field. I've got big plans for you." And that always stuck in my mind, big plans for me. And that was my last day as a member of the YHS tennis team.
Wow.
And I went over, and he really kind of brought out, I think, the track athlete in me that was probably always there, but just knew, you know, he's one of those guys that knew how to coach individuals, not just a team or a group of sprinters, but could tailor his methods to each individual. And it just really stuck with me, and I became passionate about running from that point on.
Well, Jim Miner was the track coach too, I believe, at the time. And I think he tried twisting your arm too. Yeah.
Yeah. He also had some influence on me. Ray brought me over, and I kind of sat down and talked with both of them. And Jim Miner, very reserved. You know, he was the intellectual coach, always thinking. I remember being in his calculus class, and, you know, before Friday football games, we would spend part of the class drawing up the plays that we were going to run for the day. So he was, you know, a very thoughtful person, but also a great track coach, and had a lot of positive influence on me as well.
Some athletes are just built for speed. You know, they're not too short. They're not too tall. They got great core strength. They got the strong legs. You know, I've read you have to have fast twitch muscle fibers if you're going to be a pretty good sprinter. Does that describe Chris Fisher back in high school?
I think part of it, it's one of those, I think, cases where I always, you know, in playing pickup games of football or just even racing down the street with my siblings and friends, I always knew that I was a little bit faster than at least the local kids. And I was a pretty skinny kid, you know, maybe 150 through middle school. And then, of course, once you get to high school and you start playing football and hit the weight room, I really started to recognize that, you know what, I can put on muscle pretty well. And I can hang with a lot of these other guys that used to really kind of intimidate me. And so once I kind of started to put on that muscle, that's when I started to recognize, I think, some of that athletic ability that I didn't realize that I had. I don't know if your description fits me to a T, but obviously something worked out right. There was something, I was blessed to be part of the genetic pool that I'm in. So
correct. You know, when you're looking at the starting blocks That is such a key part of, certainly the 100 and the 200. How much time did you spend getting better out of the blocks? And was that something that you really, really had to work on?
Not enough time. I tell you, the blocks put, I think of all of the things in sports that put the most fear, or I shouldn't say fear, frustration into me, it was getting into those blocks. You know, I was fairly tall for a sprinter at just over 6'3". And blocks were kind of the bane of my existence in track and field. And for a long time, I had the hardest time getting it right. And that's where, again, kind of Ray Koester really came in. At one point, what he would do is he would stand about 10 meters out and he would hold a pole vault, and he would hold it just, at the height that he thought was right. He said, "Fisher, I want you to come out of those blocks, and I do not want your head to come up above this pole until you pass it. If you do, I'm going to whack you with it." And so, we spent a lot of time in my junior and senior year where it became evident that I think I had what it took to kind of take things to the next level. I really drilled down at that point. But even then, the blocks, I always just felt a little constrained in there. And I remember at the state track meet my senior year in the 100-meter finals, coming out of the blocks and looking up and seeing nothing but the rear ends of seven other guys and thinking, man, I really blew it this time. And I was fortunate enough that I had that kind of finishing speed to get me there. So I put a lot of work into it. It was kind of hit or miss. I wasn't the most consistent out of the blocks. So while the 100, I think, was a decent race for me, I did much better in the 2 and 4 simply because you don't rely quite as much, particularly in the 4, coming out of the blocks.
All those races, how many times were you disqualified trying to beat the gun?
Fortunately, never. I was very fortunate. That's another thing that scared me so much. There was a heat before you where someone would we get a false start. And so that would kind of stick me in those blocks.
So how did you become faster?
I think a lot of it was obviously there's going to be a genetic component to it. But I really enjoyed running. There's something about the freedom of just going out there and kind of just giving it your all physically. And so I did things like hill training, overspeed work, resistance training. I picked up a book that was written by a coach out of Oregon, and it had workouts specifically designed for sprinters. So I started to read into some of that and did some of my own research early on. And then guys like Ray Koester, who I think at the time were kind of ahead of the curve in regards to training sprinters. We did, parachute resistance training, sled training, plyometrics. So a lot of explosive workouts to kind of help train us, especially that overspeed workout, which you have to be careful with, running downhills and things like that. But he incorporated that into our training. And I tell you, I ran with a lot of guys who over the course of the 3 or 4 years we ran together, there was a significant change in, foot speed. So I think a lot of it really had to do with just the coaching at that time. The guys knew what they were doing with us.
Well, you've benefited from watching what three boys who've been sprinters. Have their training been any different than what you had back when you were at Yankton High?
A little bit, but I'll tell you, nowadays I look at the training that kids do, and one thing that had been really helpful to us is kind of the off-season explosive treadmill work and weightlifting. My boys all went through the Sanford Power system here, and I think benefited greatly from that. They've got great instructors, great trainers, and as a father, I tried to instill some of my methods on them. But of course, again, we turn back to the rolling of the eyes, thinking, "Oh, Dad." The old guy trying to tell us what to do. So I think it was better for me to kind of hand them off and have someone work with them who wasn't me or another family member. I think they listened more to them, and they really kind of adopted that, and that became part of their routine. So I think the intensity of training nowadays with younger athletes, it's much more intense overall than I think what we used to do. As the science has really kind of honed in on designing specific workouts for sports. I mean, it's tough for kids, overall to excel, I think, in multiple sports anymore because, you've got that single season and kids are really focusing on one, maybe two sports anymore. And so my boys got, they played the youngest right now, Griffin. He played soccer in the fall, but otherwise the other two, it was track only.
You played football for the Bucks. How much confidence did track give you when it came to playing football, whether you were the running back or even a wide receiver?
A lot. I was fortunate too. I was a running back and I had a beast of a lead blocker and a guy by the name of Lance Wiff. who was a 250-pound fullback that ran, you know, like a 4.6, 4.7, 40. And he ended up playing tight end up at SDSU. But I do recall my junior year, he was a senior. My job was easy. It was basically I would receive the pitch, get behind him, wait for him to take out 3, 4, 5 guys, and then just hit the sideline and go. So that sprinting speed, I had a lot of confidence, but a lot of it also had to do with the fact that I had not only a great lead blocker, but my O-line, again, Yankton Grossen, big, mean, and fast.
Yep.
They made it easy for me to use that speed.
I'm trying to remember your senior year. Didn't you guys go undefeated? Were you 12-0 that year?
We didn't. That was actually, so I have two younger twin brothers. So the subsequent year after I graduated, they went 24-0 and won back-to-back state championships. And that was my younger brothers, you know, so they always rubbed that one in my face.
Well, who kept getting in your way, even to get to the dome?
So my junior year, we were undefeated and had a great season. And we, you know, first round of the playoffs, I think it was, we drew Brandon Valley, who was 1-8, and we were 9-0 at the time. And I had injured my knee in the game before and was out that game. And we went on and lost that game. So it was Brandon Valley my junior year. And then my senior year, it was O'Gorman.
After the football season was over, when did you start getting ready for track? Or were you always had track in the back of your mind and you were doing some sort of training?
You know, track was always in the back of my mind. I had always enjoyed running. You know, I had done some cross country in middle school. And I enjoyed just getting out and running on my own. So I'd always been running, sometimes to the point of being a little bit obsessive. I was trying to get in 4 to 5 miles every night. I mean, there were times I remember I was supposed to meet up with friends or a girlfriend, and I'm like, got to get that run in first. Wow. And so I think it was always in the back of my mind. There were times after football practice where I'd just go out for a light run just to kind of relax. So, yeah, I've always run, and I think that was always in the back of my mind, regardless of what season I was in.
It's your junior year. It's 1993, and you're chosen to participate in the Howard Wood Dakota Relays Boys Special 400. What was that conversation like when you were asked to be a part of that?
My first thought was, dear God, what have they gotten me into? you know, that was a case where my coaches were more confident in me than I was in myself. And I looked at some of those names, you know, Ryan Morris, who's now the AD down the Yankton, and, you know, he and I were competitors back and forth. Aaron Hamrick, who I played college football with. I mean, these were guys that I had seen at track meets, other track meets, who were amazing runners. And so, you know, I was nervous, but at the same time, very honored. And it was one of those things that as I got closer to the event, those nerves kind of started to give away. And I thought, you know what, I think I deserve to be here. My coach has kind of talked me into that. And it ended up being a great race. I mean, horrible weather. But I think of all of the track and field memories from high school, that one is the one that really sticks out amongst all of the rest of them as a very original experience.
50.29 was your time. You won by just over a second. You beat Jim Healy of Canastota. Jeremiah Smith from Hot Springs was also in that race. And then there was a kid from Lamar's, Iowa, as well. Did you get out of the blocks quick on that race?
Well, you know, I don't know if you remember that year. We had to run that race in two heats in lanes 5 through 8.
Oh, that was the rain. The rain.
That was the rain. Oh. Yes. I remember getting in the blocks, and because I had lane 4, I had the fastest time coming in, but that suddenly turned into lane 8. So I'm out there on an island. As you know, lane 8 in the 400, you're way out there. The rain, I remember looking up at the lights getting the blocks, and the rain's coming in sideways, and I'm thinking, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I honestly don't remember a whole lot about the race other than the gun going off, you know, the rain in my face, and then coming across that finish line. I don't recall the crowd noise. I just remember trying to see through the rain and the wind. But it was a heck of an event.
Lanes 1, 2, and 3 weren't used because they were underwater. All right. And it just rained the whole time. I mean, it was a strange. Did you have the first heat or the second heat?
I was in the first heat.
Okay, so you didn't know exactly what time you needed to win the race.
No, I didn't.
That's tough.
It is. Yeah, it is. And that was the first time I had been out in lane 8 for an individual event. And, you know, you just feel so lonely. When that gun goes off, you start running. You have no idea where the other people are. I just kept, you know, listening for footsteps between the pattering of the rain to see if I could hear anybody coming up on me.
Well, coming up on your senior year at Yankton, did you do anything special to get ready for your senior year, like that summer, you know, prepping for football and knowing that track was coming up down the road?
Not necessarily specifically for track. I think we had a good core group of athletes from the football team who made it a point to work out regularly together, not just going through plays, but, you know, hitting the gym, doing wind sprints. And so I think it was just a, again, growing up in a small town, you get this small group of individuals that were really tight knit. And not only were we, you know, in the backfield together playing football, but we were all on the relay teams. And so we just kind of throughout the course of the year worked hard in every single sport. And I think that it's like cross training. I think there are a lot of things about the other sports that, help you get ready for track and field. But it wasn't necessarily specifically preparing for that senior year of track. You know, I had success the year before, but I wasn't thinking that far ahead at that point. I was really kind of focusing on football going, you know, into the summer and fall of my senior year.
Well, that special year for you in 1994 in track, your senior year at state track, you win four gold medals. You win the 100, the 200, the 400, and of course, a member of the 4x2 relay. Your timing in the 100, though, 10.5, you know, it's still number three all time. In fact, the top 10 all-time marks now in the 100-meter dash in South Dakota, it is separated by just over a tenth of a second. Just over a tenth of a second. Jaden Guthmiller of Spearfish, by the way, holds the mark. Did it 3 years ago at 10.45. And I know your son is right there. Griffin is right there at number 10. He's right behind you. He's trying to beat your record there, Dad.
Yes, he is.
He's got a couple of more times to try, right?
He does. He does. And his older brother is a hundredth of a second ahead of him at Lincoln. And so those two are really, you know, they're eyeing one another. And I'll tell you, his older brother is probably his biggest fan. You know, if anyone's going to take the record from him at Lincoln, he's of course, happy that it's his own brother. But it's just amazing that you can have a cluster of sprinters that are all, you know, that close. In my mind, I play through, you know, what would it have been like to run against some of these kids nowadays? And frankly, I probably would have been very scared of some of them because they're much bigger than I was. I mean, I look at the build on some of these kids nowadays and they're very intimidating, just big, fast, and strong, but so many amazing athletes. And, you know, part of what I still love about track and field, even if my kids aren't running, just going and watching these young athletes who are so gifted. And it just blows my mind that every year at Howard Wood, records are broken. You know, at what point will it stop? It's just, it's unbelievable.
I know. Every year we think, yeah, this will be the last year. We're going to have multiple records, but it just keeps coming.
Yep. They keep knocking them down.
Your 200 time, 21.3. You know, it's now eighth all time. The top 10 all time in the 200 meter dash. They're now separated by just over 3/10 of a second. And then in the 400 meter dash, you had the time when you graduated, but now 10 faster times are posted. I guess that's not a surprise after, you know, 20 years. You know, your time was 48.76, and the record now is about a second faster. A kid from Brandon Valley did it 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's still, even after all this time, 100, 200, 400, there's not a lot of separation from the first to the 10th best.
No, that's amazing to me. It's impressive. I mean, again, I think how much faster can these kids get? And then you see someone pop one off and you're like, wow, that is impressive.
Which race was your favorite?
You know, at the end of the day, I think it was probably the 400. It was the race you hated to start but loved to finish. And I think if you can find an athlete that truly enjoys doing that, you're pretty lucky. But for me, I had a little more time. It wasn't just the mad rush of the 100, where if you come out of the blocks wrong, you know, you're talking tenths, sometimes hundredths of a second. In the 400, you've got a little bit of time to make things up. And so for me, it was always a little bit more of a relaxed race, because that first 200, you could kind of cruise through, stride, get loose, and then hit it hard for that last 200. So that kind of strategy, if you will, in a sprint event, I really loved that. I always felt like there was always an opportunity to get it back if you didn't get a great start.
It's fall of 94, and you're now at Augustana College. I mean, you're playing football and running track. What was that decision like, before you graduated from Yankton High? Was Augie always there being able to do both?
You know, it came down literally to a coin flip. Coach Stiegelmeyer from SDSU recruited me, great guy. And to this day, one of those coaches that I just have the utmost respect for and has had amazing success up at SDSU. He and Denny Moeller, had been recruiting me. And it really came down to Augustana versus SDSU at the time, who were in the same conference, the NCC conference. And the night I had to make a decision, I literally took a coin and flipped it, and it came up Augie. And that's how I ended up going to Augustana. At the time, I really hadn't thought, I was going to go there to play football. That was what my scholarship was for. And I thought, maybe I'll consider walking on track and field. We'll see how that goes. I think eventually I was going to run track and field at either place, wherever I went. The fate had Augustana written in the stars for me. So that's where I ended up.
Yeah, your freshman year, you're number two on the team in running. You had 265 yards, 9 catches for 137. Augie, though, had Heath Rylance as quarterback. You knew they were going to throw the ball more a lot than running the ball at Augie at that time.
It did, yeah. And coming in, in talking with Denny Moeller, they had a good running back in Chad Schuff, a kid from Iowa, who was, I think, at the time their leading rusher in Iowa. And I saw him, and he's very different from me as far as build. I was this kind of taller, lanky. He was 5'10" and just built like a brick house. He was unbelievable. And so I thought, I don't know how much playing time I'm going to get behind this guy. But Denny Moeller reassured me. He's like, when we're going to use you kind of in that wide out position, we'll put you in the backfield and we'll put in some schemes for you to get out wide and kind of use that speed over the top and put you one-on-one with linebackers and use that matchup. And so I was very fortunate just to get some playing time my freshman year out of that backfield. But they did tailor some of that offense to, I think, kind of take advantage of my assets outside.
Well, things were better your sophomore year. You're the leading rusher on the team, almost 500 yards. You're the number three receiver, just over 400 yards. Pat Graham now is the quarterback for Augustana. He threw for, 2,900 yards? So the offense really wasn't that much different from the year before with Heath Rylance, was it?
No, it wasn't. And, I played with some great quarterbacks. Heath was amazing. And then to have a guy like Pat come in and set passing records, for me, it was a lot of fun. I liked the running back position. I wasn't obviously carrying the ball as much as I did in high school. But as a running back in that offense, you were always doing something. If you weren't running the ball, you were picking up the blitz. You were going out wide. So it was a very active and complex offense. And it didn't bother me so much not being kind of the epicenter as the running back. I just enjoyed playing with the guys that I played with and the complexity of the schemes that were put in to really take advantage of, I think, what we had in great quarterbacks and wide receivers.
I think you got a chance to play in the old Metrodome that year. You took on Minnesota State Mankato. Why did they play that game in the Dome?
I don't remember the exact reason, but what an experience for us as a Division II college. I think there was nothing scheduled that weekend. And so maybe they thought, hey, let's get these kids in there and let them have at it. And it was an amazing venue just because, you'd seen it on TV. I'd been to maybe one game there before, but to be in there playing on that field was really special.
Well, it was a high-scoring game, 55-38. The Mavericks won that game. What do you remember about that game? Indoors.
Not a whole lot other than just being impressed by the venue. It was just a lot of fun.
Those two years playing football at Augie, you're also running track in the North Central Conference. What success did you have running at Augustana?
I had decent success. My freshman year, I was fortunate enough to be part of a 4x4 relay team that still, I think, now holds the indoor record for the conference in the 4x4. I ran with three other great 400-meter guys, a guy named Taboni Gonye from Zimbabwe, who was just an amazing sprinter, a guy named John Shelvog, who was a 400-meter hurdler from Norway, and then a freak of an athlete by the name of Tommy Dow, who I think went to the Olympic trials in the 800. And I was, I was the quote unquote fat kid on the team. I was, 222 pound football player. And these guys, and I was the slow one running 47s. These guys were unbelievable. Tommy is one of these guys that we would anchor him and he would consistently put in, 45 second splits. So I was just happy to be part of that 4x4 team. I had some, I didn't, you know, have as much success in the open 100. I became more of a 200 and 400 meter guy, but got to run with some amazing athletes. And we got to go to nationals that year with our arch nemesis, the Coyotes from USD. And they had a guy by the name of Lionel McFall, who anchored their 4x4, who was an absolute stud. So we really were kind of neck and neck with USD and went back and forth and ran into them all the time at conference meets and at nationals.
You played about half the football games your junior and senior years. Were there injuries involved with that?
There were, yeah. My junior year, unfortunately, I was having, I think, what was going to be probably the best season of my college career at running back. And we came up against a pretty feisty NDSU team at homecoming. And I had racked up just over 100 yards by halftime rushing and come out in first play from scrimmage the second half. I get stuck in a pileup and end up partially tearing my ACL. And so that took me out for the rest of that season, unfortunately. And we ended up winning that game, so that was the plus. but my season had come to an end there. So kind of went back to the drawing books and spoke with the coaches at that point. I played running back for 3 years. And actually, there had been some interest from some pro scouts who I think were kind of drawn to my size and my speed and wondered, you know, what could I do potentially at wideout? And so in the off season, talked with the coaching staff and decided, you know what, let's put you out at wideout for your senior year and just kind of see how that plays out. And in the meantime, you'll rehab your knee because you may get some looks from, you know, some of the pro scouts. And so I switched over to wide receiver for my senior year.
And how did that go? You only played 6 games that year.
I did, yeah. I ended up having another injury. This time it was a groin strain that I had later on in the season. It was just a very different position. You know, in high school, it's one thing to switch around positions, but in college with an offense, as I think complex as Augustana, it's tough to go from that running back position out to being a wide receiver. The first few games were great. I'd use my speed, get deep. But teams get wise to that. They say, you know, we know this guy on the outside has some speed. We're going to play off him. And, you know, you really can't change up your routes a whole lot for fear of interfering with the play. And so it was a little tougher for me, I think, to get a handle on the position and technique. But at that point, the injuries were starting to rack up. And so I kind of saw the writing on the wall in regards to my football career.
Did you kind of stay injury free during your high school career?
I did for the most part. I had an injury my junior year. Is actually, I remember a guy by the name of Jason Sutherland, a great athlete from Watertown. So he was the one, it was on a kick return, actually. He came in and ends up hitting my knee. I mean, I'm not blaming him. It wasn't his fault. It's football. but I injured my knee, but that was really the only, I would quote, you know, quote unquote, serious injury I had during my senior year. And I came back from that just fine. Again, it was a partial ACL tear. I didn't have to have it reconstructed. So I think I was lucky. It took, you know, 4 months of rehab and I was good to go. But yeah, for the most part, injury free during high school. But college, you know, that college speed in football, that's a whole different beat.
Yeah, it certainly is. If you had to do it over again, do you think you would have stayed with one sport in college or done it again?
Yeah, I debate that a lot. You know, would I just do track and field and try to avoid those injuries? But I look back on my time playing football and it was such an enriching experience. The coaches, the teammates, I learned a lot playing football. So I guess the short answer would be I would probably do it again, simply because the experience was exceptionally valuable to me.
100, 200, 400 meter dash, great success. No field events. How about long jump or the triple jump? Did you ever think about doing that?
You know, I did try the high jump. And then Ray Koistra said, well, you know, you ever thought about maybe heptathlon or decathlon? Let's bring you over and try pole vault. I tried pole vault once and it scared me so much. I said, you know what? I want to stick to running in the straight line, maybe a curve. And I never took to the field events. I had enough success, I think, in the other events. And you know, you're limited to 4 events at the state meet. So you put me where you can score points. We had a lot of big linemen, like guys like Lance Swift that could throw that shot or discus. So they didn't need me so much in the field events. And we also had some great jumpers. So
after Augie, you head to Indiana for radiology school. What was that like? What were you trying to accomplish after college?
Yeah, so I finished up Augustana. I got into medical school at USD, put in my 4 years there, and then matched in radiology. You know, I had been thinking orthopedic surgeon for obvious reasons, and I spent a lot of time with guys like Brian Omlett and Bob Vandermark, but really found an interest in radiology and diagnostic imaging. And so ended up applying for that and went to Indiana University, who at the time had the largest residency, radiology residency program in the country. They were taking 16 residents a year, and absolutely loved my experience out there. It was a great time, both professionally and personally. Had a young family at the time, moved out there with two young boys, had a third while we were out there, and had an absolute blast. But I think the plan always was to come back to South Dakota. You know, we'd come back during my breaks, and this just felt like home. You know, we love the area. My wife is from Sioux Falls originally. You know, growing up in Yankton, all of our family was here or around the Midwest. So the plan was to always come back, but had a great 5 years out in Indianapolis doing my radiology and nuclear medicine training.
So what does that do for high school athletics today? How does that benefit?
Sports medicine, you know, like this week, for instance, I'm on the musculoskeletal radiology service. So any and all injuries that require diagnostic imaging, whether it's MRI, CT, X-ray, ultrasound, you know, that's what we do. So we interpret those images. We have dedicated musculoskeletal radiologists who are specially trained, fellowship trained to do the injections, doing things like arthrograms to look for internal pathology for sports injuries. And we have a very robust sports medicine program and work closely with our orthopedic team. And so we see a lot of athletes come through. You know, in every season, you kind of have an idea of what injuries to expect when they come across your workstation, your reading workstation. But I find it very rewarding that I can utilize this skill set to help care for patients who are, you know, who are passionate about athletics.
Sounds like you'd become a good coach for track.
Yeah. You know, I would love that. In the back of my mind, there's always this dream scenario that when I hang up the white coat and stethoscope, there's maybe a biology teacher / track coach job out there waiting for me. But we'll see.
Yankton High School Athletic Hall of Fame in 2011. What does that mean to you, Chris?
That was something that, you know, I always dreamt of and wondered if I would be considered for that. I remember seeing the pictures of the former athletes, student athletes, who had kind of made the Wall of Fame at Yankton High School, you know, great names. And when I got the phone call, I could say it was one of those times in my life where I was truly honored to be considered amongst the greats to come out of Yankton. Because as a kid growing up, I remember the names and the athletes and looking up to them and thinking, my gosh, you know, I'll never be like that. I won't be thought of like that. So it was a huge honor, you know, and something that I'm very proud of to this day. And it's been great to see other athletes after me that I, you know, had the privilege of playing with subsequently be named or inducted into that Hall of Fame. So it's been, it means a lot to me. It really does.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.